in front of us a shishi, two shishis that make a 12th, I guess. The shishi of Tazria and shishi of Mitzora. They often joke, or joke every year, that there is a conflict of interest between the Rabbanim and the Bali Kriya about whether Tazria and Mitzora, they prefer to be combined or they prefer to be separate. Because those who are laning, they want it to be separate, because who wants to do a little cooking in one Shabbos? But the rabbis want it to be combined, because who wants to speak about leprosy 2 weeks in a row? But the truth is, first of all, it's not actual leprosy, we know that. But besides that, it is important to take every opportunity to talk about these things. We know that Chazal tell us that the concepts that we read about in these parashios that touch upon the notion of spiritual punishment. It's not explicit so much in the parasha itself. You need Chazal really for that. Chazal have the famous comment on parashas Mitzora, the second of the parashios, that Mitzora is derived from the term Motzi, Shem, Ra, and that it's meant to connote the idea that these afflictions, even though they manifest themselves physically, are based on spiritual causes. Question about that?
The Ramban seems to indicate that there's some natural nature of it.
Well, we'll talk about the Ramban. Actually, it goes in the other direction. We'll get to that, Guy Rowland. So, it manifests itself physically, but has, Chazal tell us, has spiritual causes. And the truth is, I got better. Chazal say that there are many causes. It's Lashon Hara happens to be the one that is most well known, perhaps the dominant cause, together with other things. And it is, in a sense, explicit in Chumash, not here, but in Parshas Balospa, because Miriam gets this as a consequence of her Lashon Hara. So the association between what we read about in these parashios and Lashon Hara, it's not so explicit here, but it is more explicit there. And that's certainly part of what's on our mind. So we don't have these concepts nowadays, and that's really to our loss, because the notion that is described here, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, is that you had immediate feedback, that if you stumbled, if you took a step in the wrong direction, so you got pushed back on course. And now it's possible for us to go away off course and not have any kind of correction and not be aware of what's happening, and that's to our loss. And especially because there is the notion, which we will also see displayed here, we'll have to see in terms of today whether we'll do our usual pasuk by pasuk format and just talk more outside, but the idea that there is not only feedback, but the feedback is not meant to be punitive as much as it's meant to be corrected, that it's meant to help us find the way back, as we will see displayed in some of the concepts that we'll see here. And the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer that the reason that we don't have tzaras nowadays is because we don't have the process of taras tzaras nowadays. And the whole point is the tara. The whole point is that we should not take it as a punishment as much as take it as something that can direct us back. And that's crucial. So lacking that, we're missing something big on both ends. And we shouldn't be so happy about it. So as much as we don't really desire tzaras, but we recognize that there's a tremendous benefit that comes along with it, and not having it today means a lot of things for us that are less than ideal. So the least we can do is talk about it, like we see by Kutchum, like we see by other things. The least we can do is talk about these concepts, try to connect to them as if we are experiencing them, and try to understand what are the underlying themes. And that should be at least a little bit as if they were actually present and as if we were actually getting that feedback, and perhaps then, other opposites, we can do that without having to go through all the painful parts. Matovu Manoi. So here we come to Shishi of Tazria. We're in the middle of the story. The Parsha has already been describing a little bit various situations. So here it talks about a type of baldness. And what we find here is that there is baldness that is natural, and it's not shy at any of the stories. So Pasuk says here, this is in Pasuk Mem, it's part of Gimel, V'ish ki imarek rosho kereyachu tarhu. So if a man has hair that has fallen off, so that's called baldness, if it's on normal patterns, so we're going to describe different patterns. So that person is tar, so that's not something that is a siman in this category. The Mishnah Nigayim tells us, and the Torah's poem says it's derived from this pasuk, that if he had a netek from before, and then he becomes totally bald, so he's also tar. That's what the message is here, and that the same would be true on the beard end, not only on the top, but on the bottom also, that if the situation was like that for the beard, if the whole beard disappeared, I guess that's a Sfiras HaOmer theme, so then that would also have the same din. So the next pasuk, which describes types. So the pasuk says, "V'im mivas panav yimarit rosho gibeyachu tarhu." So what happens if what we're describing here is that the hair that comes off is from the part that's toward his face? Essentially, it's a forehead. So it means he's a person who we describe nowadays as having a high forehead. So that's not again Sarah, so that is tar. And in terms of that language of a high forehead, so Reb Shamshon Yofal Hirsch, in his commentary to Chumash, where he always has his creative suggestions about what words mean, so he writes that the word gibeach is related to gavoa. So if something is high, it has a connotation of height, since that's the ibbage, so then that's what the word means, that's where it comes from. The pasuk continues, v'chiyeh v'charachas o'begabachas nega lovan adamdam tzaras parachasi. The karafta over gabachto. So if there is within the bald head or the bald forehead a white sore that is reddish, white and red, so then that's saras that has developed within the baldness. Vero soha kohen, hine seis hanega levana damdemes, vikarafta over gabachto, kemaret saras or bosar. So then the kohen should look at it, and if indeed the story is that the sore swelling, so it is this red color of white and red, whether it's on the top of the head or on the forehead, it appears like tzarash, tzaras, so then, ish tzaruahu, tamehu, tameh itamenu, akohen barosh nigo. So then, okay, taka, he is a mitzora, and he should be declared as such. And there's something that's unique about this type of tumah, that it's the only kind of tumah Torah's Kohenim emphasizes, that requires a declaration. You need the calling to pasuk, and that's what this pasuk is conveying. Also, I'm going to point out again that this is reflective of the fact that this is meant to be an educational experience and meant to have certain connotations. So it's different from other halachos of tuma, which essentially are reflecting simply realities. So here, this starts off from a reality, but it has to be processed in terms of its educational message, and therefore it needs a declaration from a kohen that that's what's true. So then, this next pasuk has some concepts which are familiar to us from other contexts, and that's relevant also. The pasuk continues, "Vatzarua asher bo hanega begodav yu ferumim v'rosho yeh farua v'al safa mi'ateh v'tame tame yikra." So this person who is declared to have this nega, so his clothes have to be torn, and his head should be uncovered, and he should cover up his head up to his lips. And he shall be declared, he should call out, that he is Tame Tame. So here you have a few important concepts. First of all, the idea of Tame Tame Yikra. So there it seems like he's being declared as Tame, but the Gemara understands that this is a public announcement. The Gemara in Maikotna, Daf Hei Mibay, speaks about this, that this is meant to tell people they should stay away from him. But also, there's another theme the Gemara mentions, is that he should ask for rachamim. He should ask for rachmanis from people. So we should announce that he is in need of such assistance. This phrase, Tamei Tamei Yikra, you might be familiar with it also, because it's one of the more popular phrases in Pashkevuim, right? So, or in Charamim, or Isurim, or other types of letters, especially for Purim time here in Yeshiva, you've seen it on the wall. It's definitely one of the more go-to phrases in terms of saying that something is problematic. So a quotation from this pasuk. The Gemara also quotes it in other contexts. For example, the Gemara says that there's a general idea to warn people about tumah. It's Gemara Mordechai also. So the Gemara says that this is a source for tzion kvarim, that if you have a kever, so you don't just bury somebody and let it go unmarked, not just because of the covenant for the mace, that's also an issue, but that the Kohanim should know where this was. So if you're going to make a kever somewhere, so you have to mark it because the Kohanim should be made aware, and the Gemara quotes this pasuk. So in any event, this idea comes together with a few other things. The whole notion of the halachas of Avelus that are here together with this din, and these dinim are familiar to us because these are also the halachas of Avelus, so that's something that's very instructive. And the notion that he should be separated in this sense seems to be connected to the idea that the mitzvah is connected to a mace. The Gemara associates mitzvah with a mace, and the notion is, there's an essay about this in the Sefer Yunim B'Parsha, which I think we mentioned last week also, that since the whole point is not just to punish him, but also to help him find a way out, so this is also a part of the process, that he should feel his aloneness, so he should emphasize how he's calling out to people and how he is separated from them, and that this is also part of how we show the harm of Lashon Hara. The idea that a mitzvah is connected to a mace, the Gemara emphasizes this in the Darim, Dav Samach Dalet. The Gemara says that mitzvah is a mace, which also connects to, again, the story of Miriam, where the Pasuk says, Al not the heap of mace. Question about that, Jeff?
It's a more technical question. So, it's kind of like an out-of-box question, but like...
Go for it. Kind of like the mitzvah who's taken out of the box. Beautiful imagery.
Say, what's exactly the extent of the aloneness of the Mitzvah, meaning, for instance, nowadays, if you have cell phones, is that going to...
So should there be an Isser on cell phones?
Or in general, like...
For the Mitzvah, not for anyone else.
Can a person have, a safer with them? What do they do during this time? Do they learn?
Yes, that's an important question. So the idea seems to be, it's actually an interesting question about a safer, because, a safer is also for an Ovo. And here we find that the halachas of Avelus are being applied to him, and that the imagery seems to be, as we start to say, that the Mitzvah is connected to a mace, and the Kuzri explains that it has to do with the physicality of it, in the sense that the limbs are kilu, the limbs have died, and they have their soul leaving from them. But there's also the idea that since the Mitzvah is one who the Gemara emphasizes in Erechin, that he has created a disconnect between people, he has separated himself from the Torah. That the Gemara says that whoever speaks Lashon Hara is as if he ignored the whole Torah, as if he violated the whole Torah. And the Gemara says also, all this in the middle of Erechin, the Gemara says that he has created divisions between people. So in order for him to appreciate that he's created divisions between people, he himself is divided from the rest of the machina. So some would suggest, again there's an essay about this in the Yunim B'Parsha, that the notion is that he's sitting Shiva for himself because he is cut off from all the sources of life, from the sources of society, from the source of Torah, all of that he's disconnected from, and he's sitting Shiva for himself. So should that result in Nisa Talmud Torah, it's interesting because that's a part of the Avelus, and then maybe it's not just the details that the Pasuk is mentioning here, but we should say that that detail should also be there. But the idea that he is communicating on some level seems to be here because he's calling out to the people and expressing that he is Tamei. And it's also interesting that this is something he's also supposed to do. That's how it's understood. Not just that the society declares him as Tamei, but that he's supposed to announce himself as Tamei. And that's what the Gemara mentioned, Lord Katan was saying, that he is asking for rahmanas from people. And again, the Yudim Parsha mentions that the idea is that this is all a part of the process, that if we want him not just to be punished, but to feel this is a way out, that this is a part of a kapara, so he needs to also convey the harm that Lashon Hara does. So therefore, let him also announce to the whole tzibur that this is the result, this is the impact. And he notes that, in a sense, this is different than any other kind of atonement. Somebody does something stam wrong, so it's not just that we're trying to embarrass him and have the whole world see. It's that here, the nature of Lashon Hara is that you take something that is destructive and you want to spread it. You want to... The whole Avera is defined by how it spreads. We mentioned, I think we mentioned the Pastor Ben Yonah's idea that we nowadays, based on a little bit based on the Rambam and based on the Chafetz Chaim, so we differentiate the terms Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra, that Lashon Hara is factual and Motzi Shemra is slander, it's completely false. It's not clear if that's the way Chazal used the term and if all the Rishonim agreed. And Rabbeinu Yonah understands it as a matter of degree, that Lashon Hara is more limited, while Motzi Shemra reaches the level where you actually change someone's reputation, where you're actually spreading it so far and wide that literally, as it sounds like, Motzi Shemra. So what is suggested here is that maybe therefore a tikkun of that is, now you are interested in spreading around this Lashon Hara, so maybe a tikkun for that desire and that attempt is to Davka tell people, look, this is what happens. Now you see how I'm isolated, you see how it has this negative effect, and that should deter the very element of the Aveira that was present in the first place. So it's not something that necessarily would be applicable to any kind of Aveira, but it's because that's a part of the process, that's a part of the Kapara process, to try to do that and try to correct that impact. Question about that? How does that mean high?
Yeah.
I have to figure it out. He always has these creative suggestions, but then has a way to explain how they more broadly look inside, how they broadly fit the themes. But here, in terms of conveying to the tzibor just the impact, so he quotes the Pnei Menachem of Ger as an interesting word also, that when it comes to Miriam, so here, as we said, Miriam is even more explicit than this week's Parsha in terms of all these associations. So one of the things you find in the story of Miriam is that the Torah tells us that the Jews didn't move on while Miriam was addressing the situation, and they waited for her. So that's, we normally understand that sounds like it's a covet to Miriam, and that's how Chaim Shulevitz has a sikha about this. Sounds like that's the idea. But he asks the Pnei Menachem, it's not really such a covet because everyone's going to wonder, what's up, what's going on, why are we waiting? And it's going to lead to everyone to ask about her situation and to draw attention to it. So he suggests along these lines that maybe that was the point, that that's also a part of the process, that's a part of the kapara, and therefore it was necessary. And in that sense, he also addresses a question that a lot of Mefarshim talk about, that it's really ironic and sad that here Miriam is such a superstar of Jewish history and such a tzaddikus, and we have a mitzvah to remember her davka in this negative context. It's a chaval, it's one misstep in a very distinguished life, so that becomes the mitzvah to remember her. So he suggests along the same lines that maybe davka, the mitzvah to remember her, is also part of the kapara in the same way that all of this davka, this issue of Lashon Hara, requires a kapar in the form of conveying the harm to the rabbin. So that's what happens here with the Mitzora, and that's what happens with Miriam. And that reflects itself both in the fact that they waited for her, so it became pretty public, and the fact that it's a mitzvah l'doros, and that's there for a reason. It's not just down that, okay, here we're memorializing her one mistake, but it's a part of the kapar, and ultimately that's a zchus for her also, as awkward as that may be. Hi.
Does that mean that the kapara for her, that's to show us that Lashon Hara still needs a kapara, or to show that, like, it's so great that she still needs a kapara and she can't?
No, I think it's, the point is that this is a part of the ongoing kapara. I don't know how to judge how much she needs, but that it's mitzdarif to it, that the idea of this being publicized has a theme to it, not just on punitive, but that it directly addresses part of the issue. You know, when is her sentence up? I don't know how to address that question, but I think his point is that thematically it connects, and so presumably we should say to Mimlam Mitzchus and the Tzedekis that her sentence was up a long time ago, and now it's Yisur and Shalava, so to speak, and that it's racking up Schus in that sense, because it's way more than she needed. Okay, so in any event, this idea also, the Pasuk emphasizes, really in the next Pasuk, of Kol Yimei Asher Hanega Bo Yitzma Tamehu Badad Yeshev Michutz L'machane Moshavo. So he has to sit by himself. Again, that's what Chazal emphasized, that he's sitting by himself because he created this division, so he has to know what it's like to be alone. The Gemara in Tzvachim says he should be alone even from other Tmeim, which is a unique halacha here. It's a discussion exactly what that means, but that's what the Gemara suggests. And there were Yonason Sacks, who was a Rebbe here many years ago, if you recall, before your time. But so he wrote an article about Parshas Tazria, which was published in the first volume of Mitoch HaOhel, where he discusses this pasuk, and he notes that the Torah puts a great emphasis on communal mitzvos, and that anything that's done b'tzibur all of a sudden has a greater chashivas than anything that's done as an individual. And he talks about mitzvos which are directed at individuals, mitzvos which are directed at the tzibur, mitzvos like Sfira Sa'omer that are directed both, a little more in Yana Dioma. So in that context, he notes that, so for example, we have a halacha that here, on the one hand, we're linking Avelus and Mitzorah. Mitzorah has a dinim of an Avel. But there's a very big difference, because if an Avel is sitting Sheva Rahman al-Islan and Yantif comes up, so then he stops the Avelus, Sheva ends, so that he can celebrate Yantif. Because the Gemara says, Amoy Katan, that Asi Esei Derabim V'dachi Esei Deyachit. So this mitzvah that's on the Tzibor takes priority over the obligation that's on the individual. So the mitzvah of Simchas HaRegel is more important than the personal Avelus, and Tosfos writes that this is true even if it was a mitzvah Derabbanan Derabim, it would still take priority. The Rabbim is this key element that makes it more significant. So in that context, he notes that it's striking that the Gemara says in Moed Katan that a Mitzorah does not suspend his Tzaras practice for Yontif. So if he's in the middle of his exclusion because of Tzaras, and Yontif comes, he doesn't undo it. So that's a major distinction between, he doesn't stop it. There's a major distinction between this and Avelus. Do you have a question about that? Yeah, but he's already in the middle of his exile, so it doesn't stop because it's Yantiv. So if it was an Avel, he'd get up from Shiva for Yantiv. So that's a major difference between the Avel and the Mitzorah. So Rabbi Sachs writes that the other difference is to reflect the fact that the Avel is a part of Tzibur, so he has this mitzvah at Tzibur, which outweighs. But the Mitzorah, who has disconnected himself temporarily, hopefully, from the Tzibur, so he's not even connected in that sense, and he doesn't have this idea of the Esei Derabim, which comes and outweighs. Okay, so in the interest of time, I'll just try to be a little more general, but this next pasuk goes on to say, tell us about the Tuma of Begadim. So the pasuk says, Vabeged, Kiev, O Neged Saras, Beveged Samer, O Beveged Pishtim. So let's say you find a Beged that has also seems to be afflicted by Tzaras. So here, the Ramban has a discussion, we were alluding to before, that the Ramban says that this is very unnatural, right? The idea of your clothes getting sick is very unusual. It's very much lo min hateva. And in that sense, he says it's like Tzaras batim also, that the idea that your house is going to catch a sickness is also not min hateva, is also not natural, and therefore they're also linked, because the Gemara says that Gemara and Sanhedrin said, at least according to one opinion, that bayis hamdugo lohayu v'lasulio, so it hasn't happened, or at least it hasn't happened now. And the Ramban connects the two, says it's the same idea, that neither the house nor the clothing has yet happened, and this is meant to be very unnatural, very shocking, in order to make the clear message from Shemayim that you have wavered from the path. He says that's why it's also a din that Chazal tell us that it only applies to white begadim, and if the baguette has been colored at all, has been dyed, so then it doesn't apply. So he says, why not? Because, says Ramban, because you may then wonder, okay, maybe whatever is happening was a result of the coloring process, was a result of the dyeing, so you're not going to be focused on the fact that this is an explicit miracle, and it's not going to work in that context, and that's why it's also not focused in Chazal, whether if the Beged is naturally colorful, maybe it does apply, maybe it's only when it's artificially colored. So all of this is meant to convey the message that this is completely unusual and completely miraculous. So there's a little essay about this in the Sefer Som Derech, from Chazal Droid, where he notes that he thinks there's a little bit of tension between this and a more well-known Ramban in Parshas Bo, where the Ramban says that it's crucial for Jewish philosophy that we all understand that everything is miraculous, and that even though overt miracles are there to remind us that the rest of life is also miraculous. So here it seems like there's a little tension, because he's saying that, oh, in order to make the point, we need something which is clearly undeniably miraculous, while the Ramban and Bo is essentially saying that everything really is in the category of miracles. And to make the point more, he notes that, Simchat Torah notes that we have this idea that a person, you know, unfortunately undergoes Yisurin, so he's supposed to be the Fasbis Maisa. The Marsh as a Brahma is supposed to contemplate what's going on and to see if there's anything he can fix. And to take that together with the Gemara in Erechim, the Gemara says that Heichan Taflis Shal Yisurin. How far can you find Yisurin to be purposeful? The Gemara says, let's say you reach into your pocket, you want to take out a coin, and you take out the wrong coin. You want to take out the 2 coins, you take out 3 coins. So the point is, it's an extremely minor annoyance. And yet, that could also be considered Yisurin that are significant. So to take all that together, the message seems to be that even these things which seem very normal and just the most minor of distractions or annoyances, that also is meant to be understood as an opportunity to correct your behavior. So how does all this stem that here the Ramban is saying that this is davka, something that is so unusual, so abnormal, so that it will have this impact that you should realize you're straight off the path? So he essentially says that, well, maybe you put that together with the idea this is something that hasn't happened, and the idea that's also worthy of discussion that the Torah emphasizes kind of a sense of bracha, which is an interesting theme also that's connected with Nigei Batim, that when you finally come into Eretz Yisrael, Nigei Batim only applies in Eretz Yisrael, so then you will find that you have this opportunity for this strange thing to happen. So the idea is it's an opportunity, it's a bracha, because it represents a very high level of hashgacha, a very high level of overt, miraculous living. And so the Ramban is perhaps saying that there will be a time when the attitude that we have now, where we have to perceive it in regular day-to-day things, we'll be able to have it coming at us even in an overt, obvious, miraculous way, and that's a part of the theme here. Perhaps you could also say from the other direction that maybe the idea is that the ideas go together in a different way, that you're supposed to be on top of things at a more subtle level, and you're supposed to respond to the more sublime clues. And the whole point is that when somebody is so out of touch, when somebody isn't appreciating how even that which is more day-to-day is a part of God's interaction with us, so that's when they need these more unusual things. And that's why it's saying both Rambans are correct from that perspective, that really you are supposed to be somebody who perceives the miraculous in the everyday. But when you are, in general, disconnected, you don't feel your actions have consequences, so that's when there's a need for something which is going to have this very overt, miraculous component to it.
I think the Ramban says that it's only in Eretz Yisrael where there's a really intense hashgacha. So, and there's a chalukas haaretz where there's a yishuv hadas to serve Hashem. So that shows that Hashem leads him.
Right, I think that's the idea. So the question is, why do you need that in the light of the other Ramban, where he says we should see everything like that? So that's what he's trying to address. I think maybe we could address it these two ways. Either that he's saying that that's the havtacha, that what is regular now will be spectacular then, or that maybe the point is that somebody who's not in tune with that which is regular is going to need a more overt slap in the face in order to get the point. Just to say, one more idea about here before moving on to Mitzorah, we have to say a little bit about Mitzorah. So, okay, look at Pasuk Nun Aleph, it says, V'ra'as ha'nega b'yom ha'shvi, ki fasa ha'nega b'beged ova'ashti ova'erev, ova'or l'chol asher ye'aseh ha'or l'mlocha, taras ma'meres ha'nega tamehu. So we should look on the seventh day, if it's spread, either the vertical or horizontal directions, or it's in or it's in the skin, or anything that's made out of that, so then it is considered to be a bad saras. So the Sefer Otzer Plos HaTorah, which we quote from time to time, so he has a comment here that the Medrash Tanfuma has an observation over here that this idea of the or having some type of saras, that the Medrash has a notion that the Nachash has stripes in his skin and has these indentations because it's a type of tzaras. He spoke Lashon Hara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore he has tzaras built into his skin permanently. And this, by the way, emphasizes this idea, this notion which appears in the Gemara, that the Nachash spoke Lashon Hara about God. I think it's also instructive, as we try to point out from time to time, that even if you follow the idea that Lashon Hara is true, it doesn't really mean true. It means that it's not overtly slanderous. It means that you are putting your interpretation into events, and that you are putting your spin onto things. So when the Nachash said, because otherwise, how do you read this? Nachash said, Lashon Hara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means he said true bad things about God. Right? So that would seem pretty problematic. So what it means is that he interpreted this rule that you can't eat from the Eitz Hadas as God's jealousy. God saying he doesn't want anyone else knowing anything. So that spin that the Nachash put on it, so that's what's termed as Lashon Hara. So this idea that the shape, the form of the appearance of the Nachash's skin represents the Tzaras, so just an interesting comment there in the Otsiflos HaTorah, where he says, so isn't it ironic then that there are people who think it's very attractive, people who want the snake skin clothing and who go hunting for snakes to make expensive items with the skin, so it seems like it backfired. It seems like this makes the snake into a desirable type of look. So he suggests, based on an interesting idea, so just based on Ibn Abachia asks, how come the Nachash isn't counted among the Shratzim that are Matame? You think that the Nachash, he's the Avi Alo Satuma, he was the one who caused us all the problems in life, so we should be ahead of the list. So Ibn Abachia says that we don't want people to be afraid of killing snakes, and if the snake was the source of Tuma, so people would be afraid to kill it, and they would keep it around. So we want people to see the snakes as something to be eradicated, because they represent this Lashon Hara, so therefore that's why they're not listed among the Matamim. And he says maybe that's the word here also. So now people want to hunt them, people, their lives are endangered because of their value as attractive garments and handbags, and that's perhaps a part of the plan as well. Okay? An interesting idea. So, in the interest of time, we'll just speak quickly outside. So, if to go to Mitzora, Shishi of Mitzora, it's pretty huge because it's actually Hilchos Nida. Hilchos Nida today is derived from the Shishi of Mitzora, essentially a lot of it. So, just we'll talk about it a little bit outside for a minute. Just make one or two points inside, maybe. One is that it's always important to remember that the Gemara in the beginning of Pesachim and Daf Gimel, the Gemara quotes one of these psukim as a emphasis of the idea that we should always speak in a tzanua fashion, always speak in a naki fashion. So here, the pasuk that the Gemara quotes, the Gemara has a couple of psukim in Daf Gimel and Pesachim to make that point, but one is from this Aliyah, that when it comes to the tuma of sitting, so the zav, a man, is referred to as merkav, as if he's riding. And by Nisha here, this Aliyah is referred to as Moshe, because she's sitting. So the Gemara suggests that that's Mishum Sneas, that riding involves a less tsanua position for the woman, and sitting, even though it's really the same din, but sitting doesn't evoke the same kind of imagery, so therefore the Torah is Dafka using the more tsanua way of saying it, to say that we should always speak Belashim Nekiyas. So the Torah, Mima has a comment there, that even though the Gemara has other psukim to make this point, here wants to make the point that even a word that by itself is completely innocent, but only in conjunction with another idea, maybe will take on a different meaning. That's also a part of the message, and that's what the Gemara wants to emphasize there. Okay, so just in terms of the laws of Mida here, so basically what we have nowadays is a complicated mixture of the concepts that are dealt with in this Aliyah, so just to say a little bit about it, that what's described here is that there are two different systems. There is Yimei Nida and Yimei Ziva. And the din is that if a woman sees blood during Yimei, what's called Yimei Nida, so then she is Tamei for 7 days. 7 days total, even if there's more blood throughout, so it still lasts 7 days. While if it's during Yimei Ziva, so then it depends. So if it's just once, so then she waits till the next day to see what happens. That's called Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom. And then, if it happens again the second day, so then she waits till the third day to see what happens. While she's waiting, she's called a Zavu Ketana. And then, if it happens 3 days in a row, so Machlokas actually, the Sajjah going for it didn't have to be 3 days in a row, but the Rav Mirisham felt it didn't have to be 3 days in a row. So if it happens 3 days in a row, so then she's called the Zalta Gedola, and then she has to wait Zayin Nikiyim after she is clean. So it's different than Nida. Nida, the 7 days includes all the time when she's bleeding throughout. And here, the Zalta Gedola, the 7 days are going to be counted afterwards. Okay, so far so good. So you see that it depends on when this happens. So that's complicated. How do you know when is the main Nida and when is the main Ziva? So this was a big machlokes that the Rambam said that there's a constant cycle, that you have 7 days of Nida, and then 11 days of Ziva, and then it constantly cycles through those two, unless she becomes pregnant. Essentially, it constantly cycles between Nida, Ziva, 7-11, 7-11, 7-11. And the other Rishonim, such as the Ramban, the other Rishonim said that's difficult because it's not going to match up with anything, and it's hard to believe that that's true, and it's going to create all kinds of technical problems. So they assume that no, that when the natural bleeding period starts, so that's the first day of the May Nida, and that lasts 7 days. And then after that, there are 11 days of the May Ziva, and then there are neutral days, blank days, until the next cycle starts, and then it starts again from Nida. So either way, it's very confusing. So Rida Nasi says, the Gemara says in Nida, that some above, Rida Nasi says that we can't really keep track of this. So we have to be machmir for both possibilities. So we have to machmir for the concern of Nida that it's always in the last 7 days at least, because maybe it's May Nida, so therefore any bleeding is going to trigger a 7 day wait, including the time of the bleeding. And also for Yemei Ziva, that if it accumulates, then that's going to start a process of Zayin afterwards. Then Gemara says there and elsewhere that nonetheless, we're even more mathemir than that, and we have the concept of Zayin Nikiyim, where the Gemara says that Afilu Benos Yisrael Miro Atzma, that Benos Yisrael were mathemir on themselves, that even if they see the tiniest amount of blood, Tito's Dam Kechardal, Yosheva Salah Zayin Nikiyim, that they'll wait Zayin Nikiyim after it's all over. And that's really more mathemir than any of the possibilities put together. The Rishonim have different understandings as to why that is, what does that mean. Choshes do this again, something that I will go into a little bit more about the Gael Maiso. But just to give a little bit of the background here, so that's what essentially happens nowadays, that we have all these chumash put together, and that once the bleeding is completely finished, and that bleeding, any amount of bleeding theoretically could trigger this, well, there are sometimes differences. Complicated point, but then you have a Zayin Nikiyim afterwards, and the Zayin Nikiyim that follows. That's the backbone of Hilchos Nida, which is clearly applied differently than it was in those times. At the times of the Torah, it was negated both to Tuma and Tara and to the relationship of the husband and wife. That's a big discussion from the Rasmun Rice. Rasmun Rice has, and others, and based on the Kuzri, a few other sources, whether the Isser to her husband is connected to the concept of Tumah Tara, or whether it's a completely separate idea. A lot to say about that. The Otsar Kol Sator, we can always turn to for different things. So the notes that there's a steer in the Drashim, that there's one measure that seems to suggest that Lassi Lago is going to be the natural apply. There's another measure that suggests the opposite, which we talk about applying even Lassi Lago. So he quotes that they asked Kant Kanievsky about this. Another sefer, and Kanievsky said to resolve to the Drushan, that it's similar a little bit to what we spoke about last week, about some of the pastures possibly changing. And so spoke about the supposed medrash that others dispute that it is a medrash, but the Rishon quoted that the Chazir may eventually become Luther, and the Arachayim said, Allah can't change, so it must mean that the Simon of the Chazir will change. That's why it will become winter. So maybe along these lines, Kanievsky says it doesn't mean that the bleeding does not come apply. It means that maybe the bleeding will cease to exist, but not necessarily every woman will be so fit. That's why some of the Russian talk about it not being relevant, and others of the Russian talk about it being relevant. Maybe it's somehow explained by that. But in any event, she just mentioned the last pasuk, towards the end of this. So the pasuk ends off the Sofra law. That he you're supposed to count the Zion Kiyam, and that has major implications. Just to talk very quickly, that two major ideas that come out of that are, first of all, so she is supposed to count her Zion Kiyam. So Tosfos in Sukkos S, the Mayim Beis, here a little more, in the Yoma, so Tosfos says that we know that Sfiras Omer is practiced, so we count every day and we make a bracha. So how come during the Zayin Nikiyim the Isha doesn't make a bracha every day of the Zayin Nikiyim? So Tosfos says that the concern is that Shem Atira Batista, that maybe she'll see blood during these days and that will undo the whole thing. She'll have to start over again. So maybe the bracha will be for nothing because the Zayin Nikiyim are not actually going to be successfully completed. So what about Sfira then? How come we make a bracha on Sfira? So Tosfos says it's different because that's the Adayim. That's up to us to finish. Die, but that the sphere cycle will be there, so it'll be there for us to count. While the Zayin Nikiyim, it may not be up to her, it's not necessarily up to her that it's going to be possible to finish, so it's out of her hands. So therefore, there should be no bracha. So there's the whole discussion. Does that mean, the Tosfos mean to say that, okay, there's no bracha, but really there is a mitzvah to count. It's just we do without a bracha. So the Shlag is still like that, that there is a mitzvah to count the days of Zayin Nikiyim. And then the Behud and others said, no, this is the way we generally assume, that there was no real mitzvah to count, it just needs to be aware of the time period and to know that that is the case, but it's not actually a mitzvah of counting in the same way that Sfiras Sa'omer is. Because there are interesting ramifications of the Shuvas Mil Tzedaka, as a Chumrah, that if there was a Hesach Hadas, so let's say the woman was counting the seventh days, and then she had a suffix which wasn't sure, maybe it was undone, so she thought she had to start again. And then it turned out she was right, she was wrong, it was actually good the whole time. So the meal stuck as a chumrah that, well, too bad, because now she was Mesiach Das from the first count, she has to only use the second count. And many others didn't accept that and said that there's no real din of counting, and as long as you know that everything was fine all the time. And that's was also one of the old Stacker's points. He was also worried just functionally that if you're Mesiach Das from the experience, maybe you're not going to be aware of there any problems. So that's theoretically an issue, but the idea that there's a mitzvah of counting like Sfiras Omer, so that most of the Afronim generally don't really accept. But the other great significance of this pasuk is that the Gemara, the Tosfos in the Sefer Gittin, the beginning of Gittin, Tosfos quotes this pasuk to tell us that the din of Eid Echa Neman Bisurin applies to women also. This is the source of Eid Echa Neman Bisurin. We know that for certain things you need two Eidim, in Bezdin, or for Dinin Hefashos and the like, you need two Eidim. But for many other things, we rely on one Eid. So Tosfos says, Rashi says that the source for that is a Svara, that it makes sense that the person should have credibility talking about these basic matters of this or that. Tosfos says that based on this pasuk, that here we see that even though this affects the Hekel Labayla, so she is still believed, Safra Love, Atzma, she is believed to keep track of it and to do the counting and to represent herself in this matter. So you see, apparently that's the din of Eid Echa Neman Bisurin, and you see that it applies to Anisha as well. So that's a whole discussion. Rav Schechter has a very long story, which he quotes from Soloveitchik, just convey the point that there is a machlokas about this issue of whether it applies to women or not. If you want the story, you can ask me privately, which is way outside our time frame right now. I think it's a long, long time to tell the story. But the punchline of the story is it's a machlokas for Shonen as to whether it didn't really apply to women, but a much more well-known position is the position of Tosfos that it does apply to women, and that seems like it's important because, for a lot of reasons, but it seems like how can we eat the food in our mothers' or wives' kitchens if we don't say it after them would be served? So presumably the ability to trust our mothers and our wives that the food is kosher is based on this idea of Eid Echa Neman would be served. So there are other possibilities. Moshe Feinstein at the Tshuva, where he notes that it could be based on a chazaka, simply that you know the reality is you've only been served kosher food in this kitchen. So it's not like you need Eidus each time to establish the food is kosher. You can have other reasons to rely on that, which could have nafkaminas, by the way. Moshe Tshuva, he talks about what if a person's parents are not observed, but he trusts them that they're serving kosher food. So if it requires Eidus, So then it's a little problematic because the Mishnah says that a person who doesn't observe a certain halacha is not believed to testify about it. But if it's about chazaka, so then if you have reason to believe that there's only kosher food coming out of the kitchen, so then that may allow for much more latitude, and that's something that the Moshe discusses in that shuva. So this is a whole issue that circles around this pasuk. And the Rush has a shita, which was also the topic of a lot of discussion, the Rush in the third part of my cousin. The Rush says that assuming that it's derived from this pasuk, that the idea of Eirecha Neman Yisurin only applies Leheter and not Leisim, despite the name. That all we have, the only mucker we have is that it's in the context of being Makir or something, so we don't know that an Eirecha has Nemanis to As or something. That was the Rush's chiddush based on the assumption that this pasuk is the source, and there's a lot to be said about that, a lot of debate, but that's way past our time possibilities. So we will stop here without mincha, and God willing, we'll resume on Sunday. Would you like to daven for us? Okay, what do you want to daven?